This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for, what is this, a rebirth show after the international break, Mr. Phil Shaw and Mr. Chris Bird. Welcome
Hello,
back,
mate.
Gentlemen.
How Hello. Are you?
All right, we're going to do a half-hour show this time.
Brilliant.
No match to talk about. So we're going to keep the original format, get through the Villa news, 3 points, media Muppets, and then probably go off into the sunset discussing Dean Smith's 3 years. But it's not a show about Dean Smith's 3 years. It's just a topic to talk about. So we're not going to go in-depth, but we thought, it's the anniversary, so why not mention it? Anyway, what's been happening in your international breaks?
I've been avoiding international football for one. That's been brilliant.
He wears this like a badge of honour, doesn't he, Phil?
Yeah. He's
always boasting about avoiding international matches.
To be honest, I genuinely forgot the first game. Someone said, did you watch the England
and the Andorra
game?
I forgot both.
I completely forgot they were playing.
I missed that one, and I forgot they were playing against... I didn't even know they were playing Hungary. I missed that one as well. Actually, I haven't even seen the goals yet from any of those games.
No, well, Northern Ireland kept up their
Bulgaria!
They kept up their protest about the Qatar World Cup by just not qualifying. So that's well stood up to. I mean, they didn't bother with the printing t-shirts route. They just didn't qualify.
We just refused to go.
Yeah. And look what happened whenever we lost the set piece coach. When Austin McPhee left, then Jamal Lewis just decides to get sent off for taking too long to take a throw in the first half. Just forgot how to take it.
Or forgot that he has to take it.
That is the funny thing about Nanny McPhee, is that anything related to set pieces now...
He gets credit for everything, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's like nobody ever was able to take a set piece before in the history of football.
Admittedly, they weren't at Villa in the last 18 months, but...
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I said that, in my head, the image of Ashley Westwood did form. And I thought, yeah, I probably won't get away with that one. But anyway, I went back. Not content with getting
basically
beaten.
Basically live at this other Spurs ground, don't you?
Yeah, not content with being beaten once. I decided, right, I'm going straight back to get beat again.
At great expense again.
I mean, I got a decent ticket. It's the NFL. That stadium's built for NFL. It's really close to the pitch. It was a spectacle. I mean, unfortunately, the Jets are the Jets. But it was probably the best national anthem, the American one, I've ever seen. It was...
Wow.
Some woman, I don't know what her name is, so apologies to her. I don't know if it's like an American, one of these, US has got talent jobs. But she gave it all, but she sang it from up on the Cockerel, the plot of the platform.
Bloody hell, nosebleed territory.
Right above the ground, on the top of the ground where they got that golden cockerel. She was on a platform next to that. And when she started getting to the end of the American anthem, 4 fighter jets directly flew over my head. And it was a bit of a Red Arrows display. And that was fuck me, I can go home now. That was my money's worth. You know, you could feel the hair on your head kind of go with the vroom.
Love it.
You know, it's the full American production, but that was actually, that was pretty good. I mean, it was well sung.
They put on a show, to be fair. They always do, don't they?
And but yeah, that the ticket was more expensive than, as I mentioned, you know, there was a deal on hospitality and for the Villa Spurs game, and it was less than 50%, and it was about £100 for, you know, and you get food and drink included in that. And this was like the ticket was more expensive than that, but it was just, you know, basic setup, no perks. But then, you know, it was still bitter in my mouth that, because £12 what I paid was some kind of game fee, like miscellaneous game fee. And then there was a handling fee, booking fee,
made up fee.
And so that's what took it, you know, to a high amount. But then you get there and you're thinking, well, I'm going to have, you know, I'll have a couple of pints of Beavertown IPA. And you notice that all the drinks have changed, because obviously they go for whatever's got the sponsorship, and it's all Budweiser and Bud Light. And so you think, oh, the beer selection's not as good. But then you also notice they're over a pound more. A pint is over a pound more than it was a week before. It's like hyperinflation. One week, it's, you know, it's gone up over a quid.
It's New York prices.
For a poorer product. And you just think, fuck that. So I didn't drink that on that day. I was quite looking forward to a couple of beers watching the American football. Obviously, because of COVID, didn't have the beer man bringing drinks to your seat. So that element's gone.
Could you drink in the stand, though?
Yeah. You can take drinks in. But I wanted to have a proper drink, not a fucking almost £8 bloody Budweiser.
Watered down piss, as we call it.
It's the Daniel Levy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's more a contractual thing with NFL, the NFL, stuff, NFL and, you know, but it was interesting to see, you know, within a week, the difference of the experience. But, you know, loads of folk there. It's still bizarre seeing so many different, like standing on the train platform on the way home. You look across the other platform and there's pretty much every NFL team shirt, you know, you can imagine. And it's just weird. It's like couldn't imagine
it. People just go for the event, don't they?
Yeah, no, exactly. You couldn't imagine it. Like, if I lived in America, would I go and see Manchester United versus Chelsea and wear my Villa shirt? It's like, I wouldn't be asked to go into the game, really. It's kind of a weird one.
Yeah, and still yet to win at the new Spurs Stadium.
I mean, Villa only won there because we weren't allowed in. So maybe that's the secret. Oh, just also I finished Squid Game, which we've actually done a My Old Man Said Patreon extra show, My Old Man Saw. That is recorded and should be out within the next few days. That means that it's the mom stuff has to go out first. So whenever that's all edited, then I will get that one out. But it's on its way, folks. And I think the Squid Game gets a mention in there amongst a load of other things. Right, I think it's time for some news. We can talk about... I'll give you three options. We can talk about Northern Ireland, the Monaco of the UK, scrapping checks on British goods. We can talk about the Rolling Stones dropping Brown Sugar from their US tour list.
Ooh.
Or we can talk about the Villa news.
Reluctantly, the Villa news.
Definitely the Villa news.
Yeah, the Stones thing is a PC thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Stones shouldn't be touring. They're too old, surely.
Shouldn't be playing any songs, let alone...
Yeah, never mind Brown Sugar. Should be the whole set list should be scrapped. It's over, boys. How much money do you need? I always remember David Bowie interview years ago where he was talking about that, you know, rock and roll is in it's the first generation, isn't it? This hasn't really happened. Your bands like your Beatles, your Rolling Stones, nobody has seen them get old. So we are in a time now where we get to see what rock and roll was, the rebellion of the youth when it came about. And we are in the first generation to actually see what happens when it gets old. And if the Rolling Stones are the evidence, it doesn't get old very gracefully, does it?
They're dressed younger than we do.
But my theory was always when I was, you know, there's like a certain age that you should just stop and that's it. No more band. You know, you get to 40, you've got to hang up your microphone. But then... you would miss out on a lot of good albums if that was a rule. But that was the, you know, that whole kind of spirit, the idea of rock music or whatever it is, the music of the youth. And that is completely changed now. But yeah, anyway. Right, Villa News it is.
Villa
What have we been missing out on since we last spoke? Of course, it's international duty time. Normally, my favourite thing about international duty, it's really a toss-up between Emi Martinez's PR move to get a Champions League club next summer, which his international career is all about at the moment. So I kind of wince a bit when it happens. And what their social media doesn't realise, Villa social media, is they are joining in the PR exercise and raising awareness.
Raising the stock.
And he's got Messi basically doing the best advertising job ever to get Martinez moved to Real Madrid or Barcelona or wherever. So I like to play down Martinez's efforts for Argentina over the international break. He was all right, you know that's all I'm going to say.
Just running the mill. He's all right.
Made a couple of saves, you know, nothing to get excited about if you're the director of football.
He's only as good as the back four in front of him.
Yeah, and Argentina have got probably the greatest back four in the history of football. So that's why he's keeping these clean sheets.
Oh yeah, they're renowned for that, aren't they?
Flat yeah, track,
so, so if I was a director of football at Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Barcelona, just know that the Argentinian back four is the best in the history of football.
It's the first thing I think of, isn't it? When you think of Argentina, you don't think, we better stop that number 10 for Argentina, whether it's Maradona or Messi. No, we think of the rock solid back four.
How are we going to get through that fucking back four? It's been a mission impossible. Over the decades of football. So Martinez, he's got the easiest gig. It's easy. Don't think that he's going to bring glory, Champions League glory, to your team. Just leave him alone. Nothing to be seen here. Nothing to see. And the other thing is John McGinn, because John McGinn tends to
score.
He
always comes up trumps, doesn't he?
Tends to score in international breaks and
scored a belter in this one.
Yeah, and then kind of forgets to score for Villa, but uses up his goal juice in the international breaks. Although he did score for us recently, so hopefully he'll get one against the Dogheads. But the main thing about the international break is this bullshit about
will nonsense.
Players be back? And Douglas Luiz plays on Friday. He's not going to be back for the Saturday game against the Dogheads. No fucking way. Martinez plays on Thursday. Now that's a real touch and go jobby. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not there, would you?
I think they said it's a 38 and a half hour gap to get back.
Right.
Douglas Luiz has got 37.5 apparently.
Nakamba, who lost both of his games for Zimbabwe, I think it's a doubleheader against Ghana. He should be back. I mean, this is the playing three games is just crazy. The South Americans making up for it, and it's just not cricket, is it?
No.
Speaking of Martinez, he's been nominated for the Lev Yashin Award for the world's best goalkeeper.
Some tasty talent in that list, to be fair.
Again, only because of how great the Argentinian back four is, and Villa's back four is probably one of the best I've ever seen in the Premier League. So in the history of the Premier League. So that's why he's nominated for that award. I mean, those clean sheets, he's not making saves. He's just not having anything to do. Does he win it? I think Kasper Schmeichel wins it. I think he'll finish higher than Kasper Schmeichel.
I'd imagine Donnarumma will get it, to be honest.
Yeah, but he hasn't been great for Milan. Like, this is the thing, Martin is, I think he's in for a shout, but just because of that Copa America.
Yeah, Donnarumma won
won the Euros.
And he was brilliant throughout the tournament.
Then you've got Edison, Mendy.
Mendy was very good for Chelsea.
Courtois, Noy. There is actually, it's not a bad batch. There's 10 decent keepers there.
And Oblak, who hasn't been in his best form, but he's still a good goalkeeper. Handanovic is brilliant, still at Inter.
Yeah, hopefully Martinez doesn't win that. We don't want to see his stock rising.
Don't want too much too soon. You want his stock to rise at exactly the same level as Villa.
Give him the world's best goalkeeper award when Villa have won something. That should tie in with that.
When he single-handedly wins us the Champions League.
Exactly. The under-21s, Villa's under-21s, who have been getting involved in the Papa John's Trophy. Normally, they just get blown out this season. The continual investment in the youth academy has seen the team kind of click into gear, and they beat Burton 4-2 away and will now go to the MK Dons. Is it the last group game at the MK Dons?
One more group game MK Dons, and that will decide who wins the group and therefore who gets a home draw in the first knockout round.
Yeah, I mean, historically in the Papa John's stroke, Johnson's paint, whatever it's called, trophy.
Also windscreen shield.
Under 21 teams have never won it. I mean, for example, my other boys, Lincoln City, when they won it, they played Chelsea under 21s in the semi-final and actually beat them on penalties. And I mean, hearing from behind the scenes, there was a bit of dread amongst the EFL that Chelsea would go on to win that trophy, because the only thing that hasn't really caused a super backlash from that cup just being a under 21s trial tournament almost is the fact that they've never won it. So if Villa, for example, went through and won it, then that would cause a bit of a conversation about the merit of the whole thing. But, you know, we wish them luck.
They did really well as well at Burton. It was a really good game of football, actually. They played some great stuff, considering they were 2-0 down after about 20 minutes. Came back, obviously, Archer with another hat-trick.
Bud was there. Was
brilliant. I was there with the doggy daycare. It was a really good turnout from Villa, actually. I mean, obviously, it's not too far to go, but there was a really good turnout from Villa, really vocal, got behind them. They played some great football, really brave. And you know, once they actually grew into the game after being 2-0 down, they scored just before half-time, and it kind of changed the game, because second half, you could tell they came out with a bit of belief and that sort of youthful exuberance. But they also knew that they were technically better footballers. I mean, Archer, just three goals that Archer scored, are great finishes, brilliantly crafted and great finishes. That all four of them were just a great.
I mean, you pretty much, since he's come into the public eye, Archer, when you look at pretty much every goal he's scored since he's come into play, it's like, it's pretty much everything that, you know, Keenan Davis didn't have.
He's just clinical, isn't he?
I mean, Keenan Davis doesn't need to be the most composed finisher, but he didn't have that predatory instinct. Now, Archer, it's above and beyond predatory instinct. He's not just popping up and timing at his runs, because, you know, he's scoring a lot of goals from outside the box. And,
yeah, he's got and a great almost, shot on him.
But it's not like, it's like a composed finish. His placement, it's really quite something.
Well, the goal for his hat-trick was a brilliant move, and it just rolls out to him on the edge of the box. He just passes it in the bottom corner. It's like a experienced pro striker's finished.
I haven't seen that many experienced strikers for Villa score goals like that, so I'm hoping he's better
all
than
three
the average.
Of them, right?
I'm hoping he's better than the experienced pro, to be honest.
And actually as well, I mean, it's the next point, but Carney Chukwuemeka's brother, Caleb, who just won the September Player of the Month award, PL2, he looks like the player that actually you'd play him over Keenan Davis. He's strong, he's physical, but he's much more mobile.
Yeah.
And his hold-up play is good. So all of a sudden, Keenan Davis is going to find himself potentially further down the pecking order than he realises.
I think it's history, to be honest.
Yep.
Villa women lost 3-0 to Reading. Reading scored three first-half goals after previously failing to score a single goal this season. So I think they had a decent performance against Arsenal, and Arsenal only just kind of ripped on in the last 10 minutes, wasn't it, in the game before. So they were probably expecting to do better now, but it's...
Yeah, bit of a sticky patch, and then the lost on penalties to Liverpool in the Conte Cup. But I think they still got a point in that, so I'm not sure about how the format works. It maybe, you know, it's a bit like US style, like overtime, you go to penalties, but you still get a point if it gets that far. But yeah, but despite that, their goalkeeper, Hannah Hampton, who's been playing well, she's been called up to the Lionesses squad.
Well, we don't even watch the men's... internationals, that information is kind of irrelevant to this podcast at this stage, but yeah, I mean, they were always going to have a sticky start to the season just because there was a bit of an overhaul in terms of personnel and including the manager, so we'll see how that one maps out. Right, I think it's time for a bit of Media Muppets. So, Phil, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week?
Well, unfortunately, I'm going back to the trough that's Football Insider, and this week, the stench. This week, Alan Hutton's found his way into it.
Covered in shit, is he?
this was the headline. Obviously, the headlines are just, they're a work of their own. They're like a small like period piece, the headlines. Hutton suggests Ings is angry with Aston Villa teammates after what he's seen in person. Again, that's just not... And nothing like that at all.
He didn't ignore it.
I can't ignore it. See, when you see, I mean, Hutton suggests Ings is angry. Well, I mean, why is Danny Ings angry? The last time I saw Danny Ings playing for Villa, he had that beaming smile whenever Ollie Watkins tucked that finish away. Like you said, it's the happiest you've ever seen a Villa player for another one scoring.
Yeah, no, he was, it was amazing, actually. He was, you know, so happy for Watkins, but continue.
Yeah, but what they extracted that drama from was this, that Hutton's actual words were, Ings and Watkins looked a little bit frustrated up front. They weren't getting the service they needed to go and affect the game. There was a lot of balls from defence that were more like clearances than nice passes down your attacking line. It was more like launching a ball down the line, and that's not what they want. I mean, like, that was another bit that made me just think, I'm sorry, did I miss Alan Hutton's entire Villa career? I can't remember the intricate threaded through balls that came from right back when he was playing there.
Yeah, but it's just another case of how headlines are being rolled out and then they just put it through a random word generator to get the actual article. I mean, you know, the Birmingham Mail is at it again. Their new international break theme seems to be that's trying to get Jack Grealish in the headline as many times as possible. And one that stuck out for me was Aston Villa have found three potential replacements for Jack Grealish. Now this is, you look at it, take a step back and you go, this is clickbait for transfer rumours. And so you're thinking, well, hang on a minute, but didn't Christian Perslow actually address Villa supporters to actually say Jack Grealish has already been replaced in the aggregate by the purchases of Buendia, Ings and Bailey? But then you actually click on it and it's, oh no, Villa have found three potential replacements. It's just a puff piece about the Ramsey brothers and Chuck Mueka. And you're thinking, oh yeah, so we're going to go from a couple of decent performances in the youth setup and general promise to replacing an England international, are we?
£100 million player.
Save that until maybe 3, 4, 5 years' time. It's ridiculous. But somebody in Match Club actually pointed out the idea of, you know, the advertising regulations. Consumer protection from unfair trading regulations means you cannot mislead or harass consumers, for example, including false and deceptive messages, leaving out important information, and using aggressive sales techniques. Now, clickbait. These worthless articles are pretty much guilty on all these fronts in terms of deception. And these headlines are all deception. And there should be something that clamps down on it because it is getting kind of beyond a joke. But I'm starting to lose any kind of sympathy for people who do click on these things because it's so transparent now that you should be avoiding this kind of shite. Anyway, we digress and move on to the 3 points. It's got to be top of the pile. Number one, Newcastle have finally got their dream. And it's a bit of a dilemma. I mean, they've been acquired by the Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund, the PIF, for a fee. I think it's actually, it's more around about 350 million.
Yes.
So that's dollars. 500 billion in assets. New owners will have more money than all the other Premier League clubs combined. So the Toon Army is beside itself. Happy days. It's going mad. It's doing this kind of stuff that Villa fans never do. They don't, when there's like a Messiah kind of event, like for example,
they
when Martin
turn up in their thousands outside.
Martin O'Neill rocked up and we saw him as the new Messiah and there's like 20 people at Villa Park to greet him. But Newcastle are one of these teams where they're almost like a throwback to like Italian teams or even Spanish teams where they go en masse, turn up at the stadium. But I think this time they were turning up from the stadium. One was, I think, is it 50% to get rid of Ashley and 50%? Yeah. Oh my days, we've hit the jackpot here.
Yeah, I think so.
But there's a big issue here. And, you know, the Newcastle Supporters Trust who, you know, are a decent active supporters trust. They kind of got giddy and they put out a statement, which I've never seen, you know, brown nose a club owners almost naively. Now, we're talking about the Premier League vetoed this move before because there was two objections. One was they were guilty of pirating Premier League games in terms of broadcasting. And the other one was obviously their human rights records on many levels. I mean, infamously, a journalist, was he chopped up, was he not?
Yeah.
And disposed of. Then there's obviously the whole human rights side in terms of women and, you know, LGBTQ, etc., etc. Now, as soon as there's reassurances about the pirating, the Premier League are like, yep, no, that's, you know, that's all right now. Everything's fine. Oh, by the way, you're not connected with Saudi Arabia as a state, are you? Because we're not allowed to do that. They've shown them some documents to say, no, legally binding assurances that the Saudi state will not control Newcastle. So the Premier League are happy about that. I'm missing something here because the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, is the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia.
Of the royal family.
Of the royal family. So this is bullshit in terms of the
sovereign
Premier
state.
League.
It's not like there's a royal family and a president. The royal family run the country. It's just...
Exactly. But, you know, this fund, it's no slouch. I mean, they've got a massive stake in, you know, companies like Facebook and the Citigroup.
And loads of stuff in film, isn't it? They're just whitewashing the whole thing.
Almost 500 million stake in Disney, 700 million plus in Boeing. They've got almost a 500 million stake in the Bank of America as well. I mean, you know, this is kind of serious situation. So they've obviously got eyes on a football club for a reason, and it's, you know, pretty much the same reason as Manchester City, PSG, etc., etc. You know, it's the kind of whole sports washing thing. But, you know, there's Newcastle fans I know, one of them referred to it as, it's like you've been in jail and somebody's released you from jail. Somebody's released you from jail to potentially execute you or something. It's like you're so relieved to get out of the jail, but what you don't realise is you're going to the electric chair instead. But the modern day football fans just wants to spend big money in the transfer fund, and they don't care how. I mean, look at Villa, how everybody giddily thought, "Oh, we got millions and millions of Chinese money now. We're one of the richest clubs." Nobody does any digging.
And those, and some of the ones that do don't care anyway.
You know, as I always said on Dr. Tony, Tony Shy, it's like the Wizard of Shy, or however you pronounce his bloody name. You know, what is behind the curtain? And we soon found out there was absolutely nothing behind the curtain. It's a moral compass thing, and we know that the Premier League does not have one, and money talks.
Well, it's almost like with the Newcastle thing, it feels like... Someone, you know, the morals had gone out the window a long time ago, money take over a long time ago, but this is like everything that everybody hates on steroids. Yeah. It's like, it's just the worst of the worst, and then some.
It's almost like the final test, isn't it? It's like, how morally bankrupt is the football industry? And it's, you know, from supporters to the actual institutions that run it. And you just see there's no classy bone in the body. There's no classy bones in anybody's body, is there?
And now we're all
it will eat itself, as we've always said on this podcast, and it's doing a good job of that.
Yeah, we all end up getting sort of being hypocrites in our own way with different things. And I've seen little, you know, statements from other Newcastle fan groups, like the LBGT group, and you think, what?
Yeah, like, hypocrites there. They're not even...
Absolute nonsense.
It's almost like, yeah, we don't care anymore about our rights. Just, you know, let's just buy Jack Grealish for $250 million. Yeah. That's all we want.
It's the real ugly side of win at all costs.
Yeah, disappointing. I mean, this is not sour grapes, by the way, people. It's like Newcastle, decent folk. We've had like a phony kind of...
phony rivalry.
Social media rivalry stoked up by the local press, but it's like Villa meet Leeds and Newcastle fans on trains, you know, after games or whatever. Before games, you have a good chat because you both
got
see...
Got a lot of pals with Newcastle fans.
You both see each other's respective fan bases as like, you know, proper supporter groups. It's just, you know, social media's another world. It's...
Well, it's as grim as sovereign wealth funds.
But anyway, point number two, the last show we mentioned the Pandora Papers leaks, talking about nefarious wealth. And Mr. Pep Guardiola has popped up in it, has he not, Mr. Shaw?
Yes, I mean, talk about digging deeper. Our favourite messiah of football, Guardiola, has popped up in it because in his last two playing seasons, his large salary from playing in Qatar, he deposited it in Andorra, where he wouldn't have to pay any tax on it because he wasn't a resident there. At the time, he was earning a reported $2 million a season with Al Ahly, and he didn't declare any of this to the Spanish tax agency. Now, one might say, luckily for Pep, he was able to take advantage of a tax amnesty in Spain in 2012. To basically pay a small percent off the top of this, just to, you know, get his house in order there. So He had the account from then up until 2012. So, but this is just he's just one of many names that are in the Pandora Papers. But I can't say I was too surprised.
I mean, any million, as soon as you're starting to earn that money, I mean, all these footballers, they've got a financial management team, advisors, but it's not the financial advisors that people go to, you know, invest their few grand from what they earn, or, you know, get a mortgage or whatever. These are people who can bury money and avoid tax. That's the whole idea and the name of the game when it's in the millions. Anyway, we said a bit about that last time. Point number three, on a lighter note, everybody's favourite ex-Premier League referee, Howard Webb. Well, Manchester United fans' favourite ex-Premier referee, anyway, has married the female version of himself, essentially, in Bibi Steinhaus. I know the American football writer Grant, is it Wall?
Yeah.
Did he interview them both together, holding hands? Or was he invited to the wedding, or what's the story?
No, he interviewed them both together there, and I just happened to read it there, and I thought to myself, I'll give it a read. I mean, Howard Webb, you're reading into these referees, they're strange creatures, but this took Disturbing to a whole new level. I mean, the similarities between him and his new wife, they're quite striking. Both
she
of them
bald.
Not yet. Both of them are...
Not yet.
Sorry.
Both of them are former police officers, and both of them's fathers were also referees, and the two of them were at the top of their profession. They both refereed a World Cup final, and they both refereed a UEFA Champions League final. So when you get that level of...
It's narcissism, isn't it?
It is narcissism. You're just marrying yourself. I mean, yeah. Howard actually left his first wife to marry the female version of himself. So they got married during the first lockdown period, and now live in New Jersey, where it said their interests include critiquing other referees, running, and when they're not together, they video cook to two versions of Jamie Oliver's cookbook, an English version and a German version. But wow. To bring it back home, Bibi Steinhaus is actually the women's select group director of the PGMOL. So she's basically the Mike Riley of the women's refereeing game.
Wow.
So I wonder if Manchester United's women will start doing a lot better now that she's there. If she's that similar to Howard Webb, they're going to go right to the top.
Yeah, that is definitely a bizarre one of marrying somebody in your own likeness. A shout out to Free Trade, the commission free trading app, for supporting the show. Free Trade, from my experience, one of the easiest ways to manage and run your share portfolio. And also it's commission free, and it's very easy to use. By signing up to Free Trade, once you fund your account, you will get a free share from the value of £3 to £200. Remember, like with all investments, your capital is at risk and the value of your portfolio may go down as well as up, and you may get back less than what you invest. For more information, please go to freetrade.io/MOMS. Moms. freetrade.io/moms.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
As we mentioned at the top, this is just to catch up on things. We will be doing something for the weekend before the Dogheads game. Just before we go, though, Dean Smith's third anniversary this week. As we mentioned on the last show, after Ranieri came in at Watford, he is now the sixth longest serving Premier League manager off the top of my head. Sean Dyche, Klopp,
yeah.
Guardiola, Fock of Norwich, Bielsa, Leeds, and then it's Smith. 3 years is pretty good for any manager. I mean, it's the longest since O'Neill in a Villa context. Mm-hmm. In this day and age, it's a long time. I would expect Smith to eclipse O'Neill in terms of, you know, just yes. over 5 years at least. I think he'll be, bar a catastrophe this season, he should still be in play in the next couple of seasons. The stakes rise as the money is spent. But how do you see him at this juncture, Phil?
Well, I didn't honestly think he would get to this juncture. I mean, I think...
Oh, yeah, you were a non-believer, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a believer and then a non-believer. It was Watford away, that 3-0 performance or non-performance. That was when I had to pull the trigger. I just didn't see how he could get anything out of that team after that. Now, obviously, I was wrong, and I'm glad I was wrong, but...
Yeah, this is why we don't let you talk a lot on this podcast.
Yeah.
Your judgment's a bit iffy.
I know.
That's why we make the predictions.
Yeah, well, you say even a broken clock's right twice a day, but it hasn't happened yet.
There was a stage where I asked Purslow to his face, I can't remember what my context was. Was it the kind of level of expectation in terms of, you know, where Smith fits in with this? And I can't remember the context of the question, but the answer you saw that they are all behind Smith in terms of the long term.
He's very much their guy, isn't he?
Yeah, this wasn't a get us out the championship, man, and then you know, let's see how you do in the Premier League, and you know, if we'll get rid of him if he's not up to the task. This is like they see him as the man to take Villa to where they want to get. And you know, you heard Smith in, I think probably his last interview, where he said, you know, I want to be a Champions League manager. So that's his ambition. So he's firmly in. This is not a stepping stone in any sense of the you know, of the discussion. But my question marks were just before we got him, in terms of normally when you get a lower league manager, a Premier League club, where we were a Championship club then, but let's say we were for all extents and purposes a top team in this country, you look at the track record and you go, yeah, you know, he won, you know, won the Vauxhall Conference, he won the League Two, he won League One, or he took him on a cup run or something, non-league team. There's like credentials of winning, but he didn't have that winning mentality. And that was my only question mark before he came. Because ultimately, you're not picking up a manager who's only just finished, you know, sixth. Well, he hadn't even finished that high, I don't think, like eighth, ninth, tenth in lower league football. But I think they were looking at him from a footballing perspective. And then we would say on the podcast that maybe his canvas, the way Smith wants to play, the way he thinks, that is probably suited to the canvas of, you know, the top tiers, where you've got better players to actually execute your vision. And you know, lower leagues, you haven't got the technicality to actually perform on the levels, you know, that you see football. So that was how that was mitigated, and that seems to have played out. I mean, you know, we've seen some great stuff under Smith.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you'd never expect to see a team dismantle Liverpool 7-2, and he's, you know, the only manager since O'Neill to beat Manchester United as well.
And you know, obviously in all the 3 years, we've had various moments in all the seasons where we, you know, we've all sort of been critical at times, and we've gone, is he quick to learn, or is he, you know, is he proactive enough in games and stuff? But actually, whenever he's had a problem, he has rectified it, hasn't he? If not straight away, he has, you know, a few games down the line, or certainly longer term, like through the COVID period, how he transformed that team from being that bad to actually keeping them up showed that he'd learned a lot. And then the following season, he
Let's
does
hover
learn.
On that point, because the lazy narrative by, the usual numpties is Grealish saved us. Grealish, you know, this is written everywhere, local media, blah, blah, blah. Grealish saved us, one-man team, Grealish.
Not at all.
Yep. He didn't turn up for Project Restart Grealish. He was nowhere to be seen. Even when he scored against West Ham, you know, within 5 minutes, it came off him and they equalised. So that was cancelled out effectively in terms of the result. But the main thing why we stayed up in that season, and it was as pivotal and even probably more miraculous than when we got promoted, because a 10 game winning run is quite amazing. But when you've got when you've spent that much money on players, and you've got
the tools he had at that
you've
level,
you've got the tools that are cut above championship teams, you expect to, you know, if somebody said, are you going to beat 10 championship teams on the trot, you go, yeah, fair enough, that's to be expected. But so we were down, we were fucked. If that COVID didn't come along, we'd probably go down, just the momentum of being crap.
Yeah,
having that rethink, and it was that reorganization of the defense, and it was the defense that was the key thing, because we were giving away sloppy goals. I mean, we still do occasionally, there's the old Mings brain fart here and there. But we were absolutely transformed, and that carried on into the next season. And, you know, what did we get? 15 clean sheets the next season. They'd worked something out. And you've got to remember that Smith was always about, if you go 1-0 up, the best form of defence is to get that second goal. And when he broke it down, just what he was saying, just the text of it, it was, this is a bit naive. And we were getting caught out and losing points because of that approach. But he found the balance in that pandemic time of getting that sweet spot between attack and defence. But make defence a priority. Mm-hmm. At least create a stepping stone of having a solid back line. And by the way, you know, you've spent money on that back line as well, so it needs to be organised.
The big thing I take from the 3 years, especially the last two, is that pretty much all of the Dean Smith signings that he's brought in, bar a couple of iffy ones in that January in the Premier League where they obviously panic bought Samatta, etc. But aside from that, most of his signings have worked. He's improved a lot of the players. You look at the squad now and the squad last season and how much better they were. You look at how much he improved Grealish, to be fair, by giving him a kick up the arse.
Yeah.
In terms of his stats and his output.
Pointing out some basics, like you need to score more goals and make more assists.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not fart around collecting the ball on the end of your own box, edge of your own box.
You look at the improvement in Douglas Luiz, in Konsa. Konsa's improvement's been huge. And various other players. And then you look just you refer it back to him being Perslow's guy. They brought him in because he could work within a Moneyball system. Well, part of the Moneyball system is getting value for money and having sell-on value. Well, you could say, well, Dean Smith's been instrumental in taking Jack Grealish from, I think when he arrived, Jack was about to leave Villa for 25 million, if not less, to go to Spurs. Therefore, he's added 75 million in value to a player.
Yeah,
Konsa, Mings, Luiz, McGinn, the list is endless.
Martinez.
Of guys who are worth more.
Yeah, I mean, the irony of the Grealish thing, as we said, his value went up when he wasn't playing.
Yeah, and he's just improved. I think he's improved himself. I think he got, you know, the coaching system around him.
He is the reason why we stayed up. He's the main reason in that first season. It was Smith, and Smith actually reappraising that Villa team. It wasn't that one-man Grealish thing. I mean, you know, we beat Manchester United without Grealish, and the only difference was that team was the same as the one last season. It was just Ings instead of Grealish.
Yeah, and if anything, Man United were stronger.
Yeah, for some reason, Smith doesn't, you know, he doesn't get the credit. I mean, it's very unfashionable,
isn't it?
Yeah, he doesn't go looking for credit, but it's all, I mean, when something goes well, it's always somebody else. So when they stayed up, like you said before, it was Grealish. When they score a goal from a corner now, it's McPhee. It's just anything, you know.
Or clean sheet was always John Terry.
Yeah, clean sheet was always John Terry. But as soon as something goes wrong, it's, Smith didn't make the change when he should have. He picked the wrong team. And those are valid criticisms, because that's the things that we say. I mean, it's the most obvious change is the one that he doesn't seem to make at times. But, you know, he's proved plenty of people wrong in those changes.
And I think sometimes with that, we react to when it goes wrong. But actually, there's been numerous occasions as well where he's made the right changes. There was the game last year, was it? We played Fulham, didn't we?
Yeah.
We were floundering around and all the subs came on and changed the game and turned it on a sixpence. There's been, it's gone both ways.
Yeah.
But also, you have to give him credit that He has his philosophy. He knows the way he wants to play. And he sticks to his guns because he believes in the plan. And now you're starting to see that. I saw that at Burton with the 21s. Now you see the way the first team play and you see the age group teams. And now he has. We've talked about for years on this pod about things like the Villa engine and a philosophy. Yeah. You're seeing that developing now. It's still relatively early stages, but he's had a plan. He's got a director of football above him, and there's a framework, isn't it? It's a much bigger thing.
That was the vision of the new owners and the Purslows, was to build. I mean, you know, that was what, let's go back to the Wyness years, that's what they wanted to instill in the club. And Steve Round was saying, you know, I met him for a discussion on it, was that framework where your youth team is playing exactly the way the first team plays. So as those players move through the age groups, they're so familiar with the system that the first team plays that it's like a conveyor belt of talent ready made for that formation.
And you've got ready built combinations within that side. You've got a Chukwueze and a Ramsey, for example, who are already bouncing off each other through under 12s, through the 15s when they go pro at 16s, 17s, 18s, 23s, etc.
Yeah. So this isn't it. This is like just the proper way you build a football club. Because at Brentford have got that infrastructure. Smith goes, they don't care. It's the next man comes in.
Yeah.
And pretty much, you know, the manager or the head coach, whoever you want to Fraser title is kind of the final 10%, isn't he, at the end of the day?
Yeah. I mean, we've got people, you know, you've got your Rob McKenzie on the recruitment side, who's been clearly very integral, Langer, etc. You've got, it's a much more, I hate using the word holistic approach, but it's a much bigger picture thing than just one guy and his vision. Dean Smith will have a vision, but there is a vision higher up that they're all locked in.
Zoom out and we're a work in progress still, and you need end results. You know, finishing 13th, 14th in the league, 11th is not what you spend millions and millions of pounds to do.
You know, you've got to start knocking on the door of the big boys now, and that's the difficult step, and that will be the big step for Smith, because it's something he never did as a player or as a, you know, he hasn't done as a manager yet, but it's...
Yeah, so this is the...
He seems confident.
3 years, no probs. 4 or 5 years, that's when it's the defining time of is Dean Smith a legacy building manager or head coach?
Actually, I think if he knocks through this glass ceiling, then you're into the realms of he'll be there a decade type manager.
Yeah, it's you know, it's like investing. Once you break through the previous all time high, you tend to really go for it, and that's what you know. It's the only thing Smith's really won is a playoff final. And a team like Villa, this is nothing to do with him because he came partway through the season. But a team like Villa shouldn't be getting promotion through playoffs. It should be winning the league.
They shouldn't have even been in the league in the first place, but they were deservedly.
Yeah, I think a lot of the criticism of him comes because it's a kind of manager that Premier League teams aren't meant to have. Premier League teams are meant to have managers that, you look at Mourinho, oh, he's won this league, he's won a trophy at every club he's been at, so he's always that to fall back on. Ancelotti going into Everton, completely failing, but everybody goes, oh, it's Carlo Ancelotti, look what he did at Chelsea, look what he did at Milan, look what he did at Madrid. I mean, Smith is very much like... Smith's at the same level as the team at the minute. That's exactly where he is. And I can't remember any manager that's grown at exactly the same level as the team. So if the two of them keep at the same pace, that's what you're looking.
Possibly someone like Ferguson and when he was at Aberdeen.
Yeah, because the model of what the average schmuck on social media, if Villa lose two games, then it's Smith out. The only thing they can understand is Villa should get Ancelotti in, or, you know, a named manager. That's not how Villa are going to get success in this game. The only way they've got to do a novel approach, and that is to have a manager that builds the culture and builds the team and is an integral part of what's happening and drives it forward ultimately to the success at the end. They're not, you know, Ancelotti's not going to come to Villa and go, right, I'm, you know, he's only coming for money, isn't he, and another job. He's had his glory days, you know. When I say Ancelotti, I'm just pulling out one name. It could be any one of the the big games, you know, even Mourinho, whatever. Halcyon days are behind them. Their best days, the days when they're integrated into the fabric of a club, they're over now. Now they're playing, you know, now they're playing off past glories. And, you know, good luck to them. They've earned it. But that's what they're getting paid for, is the hope that they can deliver that one more time. While Villa's best chance of actually creating a legacy and, you know, redefining themselves is through something like, you know, an inbuilt manager. And, you know, he's been on the journey, as a lot of the players have. You know, your Mings, McGinn.
Even Hawes.
El Ghazi, the promotion journey, and, you know, the only loss about Grealish was that romantic thing about having a manager. Mm-hmm. It's Roy of the Rovers stuff, having a manager and a captain, and that link between the fans. But there was, it did, you take a step back and you think, well, maybe it did affect the balance and the focus on Villa as a team. And I think we're better for not having that kind of distraction.
And that sort of all your eggs in one basket mentality on the field, which isn't good. And Smith admitted that. Purslow did very eloquently. And I think we're in a stronger position to grow. And also, I think we've got, while Smith's unfashionable, I still think he has all the trademarks or hallmarks, if you prefer, of a contemporary football manager. He's very data driven, which is the modern way in pretty much every sport now. You know, he's not old school. He's very much the new school. And he's got that sort of growth mindset that you need in a modern business or successful organisation. He wants to try things out. The fact that he's gone out and brought specialist coaches in and stuff, these are all things that should be applauded.
Yeah.
He's thinking outside the box, because we have to, as you've said, we can't try and play Man City or try and go up against the sovereign wealth team and beat them at boardroom level. You've got to be clever.
And also, you're not going to get a better manager on the open market than Manchester City, because Manchester City will have the manager already in place. Same with Liverpool and any of the big guns. That's why you've got to roll your own, so to speak. Smith will define himself ultimately at Villa. So at the moment, you know, Villa are still alive in terms of everything Edens and Suarez and Purslow et al. Want.
The project is moving along very nicely.
And if that is called Project Smith, then it's going in the right direction. The only question mark is coming off the bend and getting it over the line and winning something. And that will be another further test of Smith down the line. It's like, you know, you see things, the only hints are, A, you know, we took care of business against Derby in that final, as we expected. Perhaps, I don't think we've offered enough in that, maybe that Manchester City Cup final, where it never looked likely it was going to be a Smith's done a job on Pep underdog kind of story. That's what I'd like to, you know, like Ron Atkinson can pull rabbits out of hats in a one-off game and had a reputation for that. It would be good that Smith got a reputation for that, and he might not need to, because he's actually building a team that, you know, you just look at the last year, consistently, apart from Manchester City, we've beaten every one of the top six, the Super League six.
The so-called Big Six, yeah.
So that shows you that he's actually created a team that can go toe-to-toe with them.
No, the disparity isn't that great. It's still big, but it's closing.
So, you know, I'm not going to grade him or anything after 3 years. I think we are in the right direction. And this season, you know, this team hasn't had a roll of three or four games where we've got everybody together. We've still got these fucking international bollocks situations, the South Americans with their three games crammed into a short period of time instead of two, and injuries.
We still don't know what our best team and formation is, to be honest.
You know, give me Bailey fit for at least three consecutive months, and you know, let's see what this team is at and where we finish up. If we finish outside the top half this season, that would be a deep disappointment. So let's leave it at
that. I'd agree with that.
Right, until next time. Please do follow the podcast. There's a couple of shows coming up after this one in quick succession. I'll do the shout outs for the new patrons on the next show. I forgot to write them down, but the next show's coming in a few days anyway, so we'll save them for that. But please do support the show, and also get access in the next few days. You're going to get My Old Man Saw, our podcast on screen culture, and I will drop a solo podcast all on the wonderful world of crypto in football and fan tokens to explain what it's all about. So look out for that. So also, if you want to get access to the extra shows and most of all join Match Club, the inner sanctum, inner circle, the hive mind of My Old Man Said. And if you also want to support the show, then please do go to the website myoldmansaid.com. Click on the Patreon link for more details there. Don't forget to follow the show on whatever podcast app that you listen to, because as I said, there's going to be a few dropping in the next few days. Follow us on Twitter at My Old Man Said, and also track down the Facebook group, The Mad Few, which is dedicated to the show, which I'll put the links up on social media over the next couple of days. Any closing remarks, gents?
bring on the dog heads. It should be a good game, that one.
Be interesting to see what new team comes out this time with people missing. Yeah. And
who's actually available this week. Yeah.
So until the season starts up again for at least 4 weeks, and then it go back the next international break. Is it surely there's only one international break before the turn of the year now?
Yeah, another one in November, yeah. Unfortunately.
And then that's it. Right, until we get into the swing of things once again, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.